We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement from the Folkestone Herald, read by Brian Perkins.
Elmsvale dry cleaners require a full-time member of staff to press and serve customers.
Thank you, Fiona Needham of Folkestone, for sending us that. Now, for those of you who were listening to the programme last Saturday, we must apologise for what in the old days was called a technical hitch, when the programme went haywire. Today, we blandly blame the computer. Now, let's meet the teams. Would you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Trevor MacDonald. Before we start round one, here's a headline from the Daily Telegraph, sent in by Mrs. M. Mason of Surrey.
Apes have souls too, says Primate.
Richard, how nice to have you with us again. Your question, what figures are just criminal?
It's the latest batch of bum statistics, I think, that have been produced.
Bum statistics? How many bottoms have been stolen?
Would you let me finish, please? Would you let me finish? You've had your say.
You sound like Michael Mapes.
I am indeed he. Figures were produced by the Home Secretary in order to bolster his lagging reputation, to show that the crime figures had actually gone down, when everybody knows they've gone up by about 200%. But in fact, everybody's so jaundiced about burglaries and all that sort of thing that they don't bother to report them anymore.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This refers to the annual crime figures, which have been published and on look at dead cert to carry off this year's Booker Prize for Fiction. According to the figures, the overall crime rate has fallen, which is good news for overall wearers everywhere. Ian, who went to see Uncle Sam and ended up taking the Michael?
Gerry Adams, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Gerry Adams flew over to America in order to be feted by various Irish-Americans who think he's Nelson Mandela or St. Francis of Assisi, or a combination of the two of them. And he goes on chat shows and does his smiley, twinkly, pipe-smoking bit, which convinces someone.
Teddy Kennedy.
Teddy Kennedy, that's the one who it convinces. And the government were very worried by this, so worried that they sent Michael Mapes over. Must have been a terrific cabinet meeting. Now, who can we send over who's really going to counter Adams? What about that bloke who left in disgrace over the Azel Nadir case? Oh, yes, let's send him. He'll be bad.
Give him one of his watches, couldn't he?
Anyway, so they sent Mapes over to appear on these chat shows with Adams. And Adams is on prime time, and Mapes appears on Good Morning Milwaukee. So Mapes was such a flop, they had to send Hurd over to try and cover up some of the ground. It's an amazing business. Is that near enough?
This is the United States, where Gerry Adams had trouble with Mapes. Well, he is a good Catholic boy. Michael Mapes has been sent to the States to counter the Sinn Féin message, but due to government restrictions on politicians putting their foot in it, his words were spoken by an idiot. Adams was given a hero's welcome at an American nationalist club where members showed their vast knowledge of the old country by laying on a traditional Irish haggis bar mitzvah. Trevor, how nice to have you with us. Whose new policy is neither a borrower nor a spender be?
This sounds like something out of Mr. Tony Blair's new idea of political life. I've always thought one can adapt the statement that there are lies, damn lies, and promises from political parties about tax. I think they come in the same category, and this is an attempt by the Labour Party to portray themselves as a party not at all of high spending, but a party which is going to cut all our taxes. What they've recognised is that we are all frightfully greedy. And anybody who promises that we aren't going to pay anything to live very happily ever after will get our vote. And if they continue saying that, they probably will too, for all I know.
Well, we'll wait and see. Anyway, absolutely right. This is all about Labour Party policy, that well-known contradiction in terms. Tony Blair announced he was scrapping the old ones that lost the last four elections. He wanted nice new ones in preparation to lose the next four. His new line is that Labour is no longer the taxation party, and he's right, they haven't taxed anyone since 1979. Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
Setting suns before they fall. Echo to you, that's all.
Grasped as that was called.
Yeah, it's about something that's over.
Yes.
Tell me.
What's come to the end of the line with two winners?
This is the Sigmund strike. I've been going on almost as long as a news quiz. Very nearly as dreary.
No, never that, Alan.
Well, we're still here because we have a weedier management in John Burt than Railtrack have. But it's all sorted out now.
And last time anyone said John Burt, the music cut in on the show.
I was wondering, actually, when you raised, or you both raised John Burt, are we going to have a question about Armani and the tax backhander?
No.
It was wonderful this week. You see, Armani admitted to taking tax backhanders. And I thought the last time Armani and tax came together...
Yes, well...
Anyway, I'm glad we're not having that question because I'd like to be here next week. I mean, trains are now going back to normal. Going to be about 8% efficient rather than 59%. And you will still have to walk along the track. But this time the signalmen will have either 3.4% or 8%. They will have a payoff of either £460 or £2,000. They have or haven't agreed to new work procedures. All we have is a sum total of debate going on for about 15 weeks. With no real answer, and both sides claim they've won.
That's right.
But we do know who's lost, don't we?
Are you going to save the traveller?
Yeah.
By God. And who said satire was dead?
Just not very well.
Yes. It's a bit shaky.
But they're putting the fares up straight away, aren't they?
Absolutely. We're not travellers anymore, by the way, we're customers.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Well, it's a good idea, because travellers are required to travel. Customers just exchange money for things. They don't really have to go anywhere. Just sit on the station saying, I'm a customer.
Customer.
I'm going to be a customer in Bournemouth if a train ever comes in, but up until until that happens, I'm a customer here at Euston.
You don't have trains either, they're services.
Anyway, the answer to the question is the rail strike, which ended with a stunning 0-0 victory. Bob Horton's 3.4% was accepted by Jimmy Knapp as the best 8% he could hope for. Sigmund have, however, agreed to forego their shoe leather allowance, so no more free sandwiches in the station buffet. And the scores at the end of the first round are, as they always are on the news quiz, 4-4. We start round two with an item from Police Review.
Devon and Cornwall Constabulary's eagerness to put as many officers on the beat as possible backfired last week when thieves stole £500 from the Totnes station while it was unmanned.
Thank you, John Stocks of Selston, Nottinghamshire, for that. Richard, your question again. Who wants time off to keep mum?
It's to do with Mr. Portillo, isn't it?
It is to do with Mr. Portillo.
Mr. Portillo wants to oppose a move by the people in Brussels, you know, who control our lives nowadays, who are insisting that every man, Jack, should be given 3 months off. I'm behind Portillo on this, because...
That's a very unfortunate phrase.
You wait till we get to the Bishop of Durham. Has he answered the question?
Yeah. We're going to get 3 months off. All fathers of... children, presumably, struggling for where they're going to get 3 months off so we can stay at home and help out and bond.
But not if Portillo has his way, surely.
Why are you obsessed by Portillo having his way with people?
You've come on a good night, Trevor. This is a proposal to allow men the statutory right to paternity leave, which was rejected by Michael Portillo, only to be supported by a large group of Tory MPs. The new law would allow men time off if their wives or girlfriends give birth, although this confused cabinet ministers who wanted to know how many weeks they get if their wives and girlfriends give birth at the same time. And Ian, while we're being beastly to the government, your question is, why did a smacked Bottomley rekindle the corporal debate?
This is to do with smacking children. Yes. Mrs. Bottomley shocked the nation by coming out and saying something sensible.
Which like Mr. Portillo.
Which, yes, it was absolutely extraordinary.
We're in agreement here. We like the Tories.
Yes, good old Portillo and Bottomley. I want time off and I want to hit my children. So there we go. No, it was terrible. Mrs. Bottomley appeared on national television and radio speaking common sense. And so there was a huge outcry. How dare you support something that's self-evidently sensible?
She said,
"Go away and close down a hospital."
Well, she said she'd smacked her own children, and it never did her any harm.
Yes, this is Health Secretary Virginia Bottomley, who admitted smacking her children. Mrs. Bottomley believes good discipline belongs in the home, and like most of her cabinet colleagues, who believe good discipline belongs in the leather bar of the pink pussycat.
The detail of that joke is extraordinarily accurate. Something about you we should know, Barry.
The Health Secretary says smacking was the only viable punishment left open to her, and she can only send them to their rooms with beds become available 8 miles away in neighbouring towns. Trevor, will you have a listen to this?
When I was in the army, I was a cavalryman, you know. Whenever I went to parade, a magnificent picture I made. Through my galloping here and my galloping there, this ridiculous habit I got. And I'm hanged if I don't think I'm galloping now, whether I'm up in the saddle or not. And the people will stare at me so, no matter wherever I go. Bumbaday, 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 bumbas, I was riding me charger. Bumbaday, 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 bumbas, proud as an Indian Raja. All the girls declare that I am a gay old stager. Hey, hey, clear the way, here comes a galloping major.
The question is, who took an advance in return for royal pages?
The galloping major must be Major Ron.
Yes.
Yes, Major Ron is writing these rather sad, saucy memoirs, or whatever one might call them. The great fun about it was watching the rival papers claim who, in fact, has had the authority to publish these things and carrying out spoilers against each other, you know. So you weren't sure whether it was the Daily Mail or Daily Express or Today or The Sun which actually had the story because they all covered it.
And I don't know what... The story is that this rather sad old fellow is telling the story again.
He's telling the story again.
The Wigmore Club. I just went in for an afternoon's relaxation.
Yes.
On the other hand, Ron.
I'm sure that's absolutely right, too. I mean...
Yes, thank you, Trevor.
Absolutely right, yes.
Thank God we've got somebody sensible on the panel.
Absolutely.
Anyway. It's all about Major Ron Ferguson, or as he's known to his in-laws, Major Embarrassment. His new book, The Galloping Major, reveals the most intimate details of his daughter's failed marriage, previously known only to a select few close family friends and the entire readership of The Sun and The Daily Mirror. Fergie finds the idea of her father making £200,000 out of publicising his family's secrets quite disgusting. He'll ruin it for everyone selling them so cheaply. In fact, she was so upset by it all, she very nearly cancelled a short trip to Britain. Alan, would you care to tell us what the bishop said to the farmer?
I saw him with a large sword.
Yes?
No, it really was. It actually was a large sword. Beating the bounds between, I think, Yorkshire and somewhere else, and Durham. Because he was keeping sin out of one or the other. I can't remember which he was keeping sin out of, but he'll be very good at it. I think the poor man suffered enough. Durham is ill-served by its bishop, so jolly unlucky. The last one said something nasty, and Minster burned down. The unfortunate present incumbent has been exposed as someone who, 26 years ago, was just unfortunately involved with another person. Isn't it? I don't think he did anything. It was an act of gross indecency. It could have been anything. I mean, he could have spat in his beer. I never know about gross indecency. Are there sort of minor indecencies?
I don't know. I'm not into
very
that.
Gross indecency. Well, anyway, we don't know what he did with this chap, but he did it 26 years ago. And then he's issued various edicts saying that no one should do this, and it's really bad news.
That's right.
He suffered enough.
This is the Right Reverend Michael Turnbull, the Bishop elect of Durham. The Reverend Turnbull is to be enthroned despite a conviction for an indiscretion when he was too young to know better. He was a mere slip of the lad of 32 when it happened, and just 56 when he slipped up a game by claiming that kind of thing isn't compatible within the church. The scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with a cutting from the Wells Journal.
At Tuesday's Glastonbury Town Council meeting, Councillor Janice White said the new super-loos planned for the area have been vetoed by English Heritage. She said, we have to start again with a clean piece of paper.
Richard, what song of praise reached a different pitch?
Is this another ecclesiastical
it is.
Question?
It is.
What, hymn singing?
It's about hymn singing, yes.
No, I can't do this one.
Songs of praise in a football stadium. That's a clue.
You answer.
It's also the answer, by the way.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, could we move on back?
This is Songs of Praise, which drew a crowd of 40,000 people to Old Trafford, the home of many miraculous apparitions, like Bobby Charlton's hairstyle. The mass sermon was marred when a group of Satanists broke into the Christian end and chanted, you only sin when you're winning. Meanwhile, the general synod five-a-sides were enlivened when the Bishop of Durham scored unexpectedly. Ian, here's a piece of music for you.
We're only making plans for Nigel.
And that was the economically named group XTC singing Making Plans for Nigel. And the question is, who was given short shrift over a deathly cough?
It was someone called Nigel.
That's right.
It was Nigel Mansell.
No, it isn't. It's the other.
Oh, go on, he's got a cold.
No.
Nigel Pargeter. He's got a cold. Nigel Kennedy. He's got a silly voice.
We've gone through all the Nigels now. That's it.
You haven't come to the one that's on this piece of paper.
Nigel Short.
That's right.
Oh, right.
Very good.
Having gone through every Nigel in the calendar, you've only wound up the white one. Well, what happened to him then?
He had a cold.
No, I think he had a bit of a contretemps with a Russian chess player. The Russian chess player didn't seem to operate without his father in attendance or something. Is that right?
That's right.
Ah, yes. And the man was called Knock Your Block Off.
That's right. And if ever his son was losing, this Russian would go up and beat the opponent and threaten Nigel Short.
That's right.
And Nigel had to call the police and so on.
This is Britain's chess champion Nigel Short, who lost a match after receiving a death threat from his opponent's father. During the game, Gator Kamsky's constant coughing was affecting Short's concentration. At this point, Kamsky Sr. issued the death threat, which left Short so disorientated that his last move involved Colonel Mustard in the library.
Or Major Ron in the Wigmore Club.
No! Trevor, your time for a question again. What jobs are being advertised for a trial period?
Is this the... Thank you. Thank you, Alan.
Alan has just passed a piece of paper to Trevor.
Judges, it says.
That's right.
The idea that these judges know so little about normal, ordinary life that we have to have a new set, and the way to do it is to get the public relations men in and advertise it and get it in Private Eye and Daily Mail.
Fine. 24-hour judges, no job too large or small. Let us go. Like deliveries with awesome Van Daly, own week's supply. I've seen them. We have them around here.
Judge.
I opened the door last night to a large pizza and was about with a full-bottom wig. You have to be quick because I'm on a double yellow line. And I've got to be at Wiltshire Assize by 7:30 with the anchovies.
Can anyone apply?
Yeah. I think absolutely anyone can apply.
Is there
no qualification?
Limit?
Legal training, no bar.
Richard, I found a job for you.
Hey, that's a
judge.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice.
You're very old, you can't hear anything.
This is the surprising news that judges' jobs are to be advertised in the papers. Interviews are open to anyone suitably qualified and include such questions as, were you at Eton with me? Should the fair sex be given the vote? And who are John, Paul, George and Ringo? And if the applicant gets the last one right, he fails. Alan, who isn't feeling chuffed about feminism going off the rails?
There's the political rectitude of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Right.
Who is going to be linked with a steam engine called Mavis to make his life better and bring the roses to his cheeks. Apparently the, I always forget his name, the Reverend...
Audrey.
The Reverend Audrey.
No relation to the Bishop of Durham.
No, no, whatever, no.
Audrey Durham is furious about this. And he got 7 million for the television rights. But he's absolutely furious because they think he thinks they're interfering with a work of art.
This is about the Reverend Audrey, who's upset by the rise of political correctness in his Thomas the Tank Engine stories. Female characters are to be given more responsibility, while narrator Ringo Starr will be described as differently sober. The refreshment lady is to be given a larger role and some bigger pork pies. The scores have taken a leap to the left because, although Richard and Ian have scored a wonderful 11 so far, Alan and Trevor are well in the lead now with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a piece from The Guardian sent in by Mrs. C. Cairns of Clwyd.
Victor, a 25-pound lobster, estimated to be between 80 and 100 years old, was stolen from his tank at Seaside Aquarium in Oregon. Fortunately, employee Becky Beerley noticed the man walking away with Victor. It wasn't too difficult to spot the guy, said aquarium manager Keith Chandler. He had a lobster under his arm.
Well, thank you, Mrs. C. Cairns. Now, Richard, here's a piece of music for you.
Gary Adams' real voice.
Not real, isn't it? Your question is, Richard, whose recipe could be beaten?
Mrs. Beaton. Yes.
Say something quickly or it'll take points away. It's her recipe for mayonnaise. And apparently it may give people salmonella.
Yes. Well, everything's dangerous nowadays.
So a whole lot of people were making mayonnaise and giving each other salmonella because of this recipe.
No.
Well, if she was exonerated. Well, Cross and Blackwell got 10 years each without the option. But, I mean, she got off. I mean, the judge tasted the mayonnaise and didn't fall over. They advertised for 3 new judges. They were all right.
Let me tell you about this. It refers to sandwich bar owner John Ferrier, who was fined £7,500 for poisoning 62 customers but blamed Mrs. Beaton in his defence. He followed her 130-year-old recipe to make mayonnaise, but went overboard on authenticity by using 130-year-old eggs to go in it. Ian, your question now. Where did a delivery service shed an unreliable image?
There's a bloke called Nigel who had a shed. Which he delivered, along with a pizza.
And I'll turn it to Alan now because he knows the story.
Ian has nearly picked the bones out of it. There's a bloke whose business was in a bit of trouble. A bloke made sheds and put an advert in exchange of Mart to drum up business, and said free delivery of this shed. Didn't do his business any good, because a bloke from the Hebrides rang up and said, I'll have one of those. And a 200-quid shed was sent to the Hebrides, about 45,000 quid. The bloke now has it. It's a fine shed. God knows what happened to the business. But I think that was it, wasn't it?
It's exactly it. This is a story about a shed that was delivered 800 miles to the Outer Hebrides from Portsmouth and was of great interest to all the members of the Outer Hebrides Shed Club. Shed manufacturer Colin Stewart advertised it for £450 to include delivery. His first customer was Neil McLeod, who lives on the Isle of Scalpay. So, true to his word, the round trip was made in 3 days at a cost of £200. Despite the dire effect on his profit margin, Mr. Stewart is apparently quite happy delivering to Scottish islands. He said he's now providing a service for Rock All. Trevor, what's been designed to swim with the current?
I read a thing in the paper about a fish-like contraption which was manufactured by somebody. And I read this thing about four or five times and I couldn't understand whether he was imitating the fish or he was trying to do better than the fish. I think the word tuna was mentioned somewhere in this piece. But somebody has designed something which moves along the sort of ocean floor like a fish. It's a sort of robot fish.
That's right. It's all about Charlie, the testing tank tuna, a powerful metal robot fish developed by Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is battery-powered for undersea exploration. MIT are also working on a robo-lobster, which has salt-locating sensors. So when you put it on a plate, it can go off and find the cruet on its own. Sadly, their attempt at a tin clockwork sardine wasn't a success. When they tried to wind it up, the key broke after the first turn. Alan, what man hijacked the legend of Excalibur?
It's Braintree Man, isn't it? It turns out, I mean, every week, revisionism stalks our midst. King Arthur is actually King Arthur. And because the translation of Camelot is Camerudo's whatever it is, which is the modern, or was the old name for Colchester. So it turns out the Round Table was in Braintree. So it wasn't Guinevere, it was Trish, and it wasn't Sir Lancelot, it was Sir Geoff. And, well, I mean, that's about it, really.
It is, yes, absolutely right.
Is this historically right?
I've no idea. No, it was in the Telegraph. Well, which it was there, it must be right.
And it's... And it's arrived here. It's all about historian Alan Goldsmith, who claims King Arthur was an Essex man. The local historian believes that Arthur was based around Ilford, from where he would embark upon his intrepid journeys to the exotic Far East. Yes, sometimes he went as far as Dagenham. Now, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you got a cutting for us?
I've got a very tattered old cutting from a newspaper in New Zealand.
Oh, really?
It refers to events in Starbridge. Hmm? Says, a crematorium at Starbridge in England has apologised to relatives of a recent clout. Instead of every time we say goodbye, they accidentally played Smoke Gets in Your Eye.
Another winner there, Richard.
Yes, old but true.
Ian.
This is a cutting from the Worksop Trader News. It says, Bassett Law charity, Hope, is appealing to kind-hearted folk to donate their underpants after their own piles almost ran out.
Trevor.
I've always had to read things like this, and I've never really understood them, which goes for a lot of the things I read, but there you are. It says, a 20-year-old decorator was recovering in hospital last night from severe burns to his groin and his thighs. He also had a broken jaw and a broken leg, and his condition was said to be comfortable.
Alan.
Asked him, are you comfortable? And he said, well, I'm not rich. I've got a few bob put by. I got one of those think twice ones from the Dundee Courier. It says, police are worried that 68 rifles and shotguns stolen from a city warehouse may end up in the hands of criminals.
Well, thank you all. Let's look at the final scores, which are quite interesting, because Richard and Ian have got 13, but Alan and Trevor, this week's winners, with 18. Well done, gentlemen. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
Doris, the pot-bellied pig, belongs to Mr. Mark Cracknell, who will auction Doris on October the 1st. Mr. Cracknell said, I bought her over a pint in the pub one night. I wanted to breed, but Doris was a bit cantankerous, and I never got around to it.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Ian Hislop and Trevor MacDonald. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser Steele. The producer was Alad Evans.
We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a correction in the Sunday Express, read by Charlotte Green.
On page 35 of this week's section 3, we feature a recipe...